This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. We're not just talking about housing this week. We got letters on a whole range of financial issues, especially ones about you as a consumer and how you interact with companies, big and small. We've all had experiences of dealing with fees and hidden charges. So we brought in Los Angeles Times consumer columnist David Lazarus to answer your questions. Welcome back, David.
Thank you, Lizzie.
We've got our first caller with us, and it's Debbie in York, Pennsylvania. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to Marketplace Money.
Hello.
Debbie, what's your situation? I gather you had a medical situation that got a bit out of control.
Well, it was the billing, actually, that really surprised me. I went to a walk-in clinic with a rash on my ankle, so just something very simple. The doctor looked at it, told me it was poison ivy. And the walk-in clinic is a member of my insurance's network, paid the $15 copay that day, and went on my way. Shortly thereafter, I get an explanation of benefits from my insurance company, which shows two separate billing items, one for the visit, and then there was an additional $50 charge. And I wasn't sure what the $50 charge was, so I called the walk-in clinic up. They said the billing is done through a third-party facilities. They gave me the number, called that number, and they told me the $50 charge was a facilities charge for the walk-in clinic to be there, I guess.
And what did you say to them?
I said, well, doesn't any place you go has a facility? Was I supposed to meet the doctor out on the street corner or something? I mean, and of course, my insurance says they're not paying a $50 facilities charge.
Well, what happened?
When I called the third-party billing place and they told me it was a facilities charge, the first person I talked to said, oh, no, it should probably be taken off because I had gone to that clinic once before about a year ago and wasn't charged that. Shortly after I talked to the first person, a second person called me back and said, oh, no, that $50 is going to be charged. You'll be billed for it. At which time I told him, well, I probably will not be paying this because I just don't feel it's an ethical charge. And yes, it's only $50, but I just didn't feel I should have to pay it. And he said, well, it'll go through the regular three-cycle billing thing, and then it'll be turned over to a collections agency if that's what you feel. And I said, well, fine, so be it. Then he went ahead, or somebody went ahead, and billed my credit card that I had used the day when I went for the first visit for the $15. Now, I've since called my credit card company to try to dispute it, and they told me that they can't really take it off because it's a valid charge because the facility had the charge card number on file from the previous transactions I did with them.
Well, I bet David has thoughts about this. David, have you ever heard of a facilities fee or something like this happening?
Oh, absolutely. And this is messed up on many levels, clearly. A facilities charge typically applies when you go to a hospital, a large facility. A walk-in clinic, I haven't really heard of many examples of that. Now, there are a number of things to address here. First of all, Deborah's exactly correct. What facility is she paying for here? The toilets? The closet?
Right.
I mean, what facility is it? I mean, that's one thing. Another thing is her insurer should be the one stepping up and dealing with the healthcare provider here to get rid of this fee. It's not like the insurer should just be wiping their hands of it and saying, walking away and saying, it's your problem, not ours. That's not the way the insurer is supposed to work. And then finally, the idea that they're going to ding your credit card simply because they can without your authorization certainly seems to be walking around a few moral and ethical lines here. But here's what we're looking at. This is the brave new world of cost shifting. And cost shifting is what happens in the healthcare world when basically a healthcare facility, whether it's a hospital, whether it's a clinic, whether it's just a doctor's office, wants to ding an insured person for the costs of treating uninsured people. So what they're doing is they're slapping you with these bogus charges or raising charges for things that are perfectly normal, like, say, anesthesia or bandages or saline or tests. They charge wildly ridiculous prices for those. So, again, they can take some cream off the top and apply that to their costs in treating the uninsured. Is any of that fair? No. Is it business as usual? Yes.
What resources are available, David, for people who are in a situation like Debbie's, either now or will there be any more or less once the Affordable Care Act starts to kick in?
Well, the Affordable Care Act isn't really going to address things like this. It doesn't get at costs or pricing to a great degree. There's some elements to it. What the Affordable Care Act does, at least right out of the gate, is try to go after the 50 million uninsured and bring as many as possible into the fold. So what Debbie and others in her position should do is, first of all, you appeal to the hospital or to the clinic in this case. They will have a dispute process. Jump through those hoops. It's worth it. Also, work with your insurer. Your insurer has an obligation to try and handle billing questions. That's what the insurer is there for. That's how they've cut them in for a piece of the action. So the idea that they're going to take their piece and walk away doesn't seem fair at all. You are paying premiums to them. Therefore, they do have some responsibilities here. Now, if none of that gets you anywhere, you always have other choices. For instance, there are folks out there called patient advocates. And what you can do is do a Google search for patient advocate in your area, and so put in the right parameters, and you'll get people who exist solely to step in and be an intermediary. These are people who have a lot of experience in the healthcare equation and can help do blocking and tackling in this sort of thing. Now, for a $50 charge, I don't know if it's going to be worth it per se.
So a patient advocate, would that normally be a charge?
Yeah,
they're
not in it out of the goodness of their hearts.
Okay.
So when you have a situation where you're looking at thousands of dollars, that's where a patient advocate can be very helpful and save you some money. $50, you know, you can shop around a little bit. You can see if somebody might do it. You can even see if someone will just simply give you some advice pro bono over the phone. And then, you know, as a last recourse, if you just want to get your voice heard after you pony up the $50, you can contact the Department of Insurance in your state. You can also contact the Attorney General in your state. And you can contact the FTC at the federal level and just simply say, this is an unfair business practice and I want to protest.
Oh, okay. I've made note of all these things. It gives me a few more things. I will go back maybe and appeal to the clinic again and go back to the insurer. When I did talk to the insurance, they basically said they have no control over what a facility bills.
Yeah, but they've got more muscle than you do. And quite simply, if they start exercising it, oftentimes a practitioner will back down because they don't want the hassle either. But I would advise making the stink. I'm a big believer in squeaky wheels and grease.
Debbie, thank you so much for calling us. I hope this has at least given you a couple of options.
Yes, it has. Thanks for taking my call.
This is Marketplace Money from APM. David Lazarus is my guest this hour. He's the consumer columnist at the LA Times. We've got a letter from a listener in Alamo, Idaho. Her name is Kristen, and she wrote to us about her father, who is 70. Kristen's dad is a retired employee of the FDIC, and he worked for years as a bank examiner. Right now, she's a little bit worried about him because, according to her, he pays for account monitoring services to ward off unauthorized use of his financial accounts and to ward off identity theft. But Kristen wonders if what he's paying for is actually worth it. So what do account monitoring services do besides alert you of suspicious activity? And are there some that will do more than others to protect your money? All right, David, give us the skinny on account monitoring services.
All right, the skinny here is, first of all, they do exactly what you're talking about here. You've got your credit files with the major credit reporting companies, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. And if something untoward is happening, if someone has your social security number, if someone has other elements of your identity and is trying to commit some fraud, credit monitoring is going to be your first line of defense, just to know that something hinky is going on out there and that someone's going to have to do something about it, more than likely you, the consumer, because if you don't do it, it's not like there's a bunch of ninjas that are going to come storming out and protect you in this case. Now, I thought the interesting thing in the letter was your use of the plural, that this gentleman has multiple services. And I think that's where the wrong turn was taken, because there really is no need. There are services out there called 3-in-1 services that monitor all 3 credit files and then bring it all together and keep you alerted to all of them. And that's exactly the way you want to do it. And there's a charge to it. Different companies will offer different rates on these things. But generally speaking, not a bad idea if you're concerned about your credit. Now, there's other things you can do. You can put fraud watches on your file. You can even freeze your credit files if you want to make sure that nobody can get at them. But I wouldn't say that's for everybody. I mean, it's got a fixed cost, a monthly cost, and in most cases, you don't need that level of protection. And here's what you should do instead. There is a service out there called annualcreditreport.com. And this allows you to get one free credit report from each one of the major agencies once per year. Thus, if you space it out every 4 months, you're going to have year-round credit monitoring. Now, it's not foolproof because different creditors will use different credit reporting companies. You spread it out like this, and it's poor man's credit monitoring right here. And here's another good tip, too. Not in every state, but in some states, AAA will offer free credit monitoring on your Experian file. And so you might want to contact AAA and see if you're eligible for that, because that's a terrific service as well.
David, wow. Thank you.
Here to please. That's what I'm here for.
All right. We're going to get another caller on the line. We've got Chris in Michigan. You're in Grand Rapids. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
My dad's from Michigan. I love your state very much.
Oh, me too.
Tell me about your situation. I gather you've had kind of a bumpy experience trying to buy a house.
Oh, definitely. I mean, who hasn't nowadays? But my partner and I went to get a mortgage, and we got pre-qualified. We found a house, and then we went to the bank and did the more in-depth part where we gave them bank statements and W-2s and everything. And a couple days later, we got our good faith estimate, and we weren't really satisfied with it, and we wanted to kind of shop around. So we went to another bank, and we thought about going with the second bank. And so for some reason, we thought, oh, I think we're going to get charged if we decide not to continue forward with the original bank. So we called them, and they said, yes, you would be charged the $400 for the application fee, and we've already scheduled the appraisal. And so we decided, okay, well, this other bank said they could save us $400, so it's a wash. We'll just continue with our original bank. We feel like we kind of gotten taken advantage of, because I thought I read somewhere that a bank can only charge you for the credit check before moving forward with them.
And what happened? Did you end up getting the house?
Yeah, we got the house. We got the mortgage at 4.5%. Everything went fine, but just the fact that we felt like maybe we were lied to continue on with the bank kind of left a bad taste in our mouth.
Understandably. David, what do you think?
Well, I think the bad taste is understandable, but You were jumping through all the hoops that most people have to jump through. And I think the first thing that's, you know, questionable here is the size of the application fee. In your case, $400. I've heard of some application fees that are as much as $500. This is crazy because there's going to be a whole mountain of other fees coming down at you. So the idea that just to get the ball rolling, you've got to cough up hundreds of dollars seems, you know, grossly unfair and grossly, you know, out of line with the service you're getting. However, banks do this because they know that you're going to shop around, and they want to make sure that they can get a little piece of the action before you move on to somebody who may offer a better deal. Now, if you got a good faith estimate from these guys, and did you?
Yes, we did.
Okay. You can't get a good faith estimate from a lender without agreeing to the application fee. That's a part of the process. They don't do that out of the goodness of their hearts because they want to win your business. No, they're doing that because you have come through the door and expressed an interest in it, and now there is a fee that's being attached to that. Therefore, the good faith estimate is what that $400 is all about. Now, should people do this knowing that? My answer to that is, yeah, you should. Shopping around can make a big difference when it comes to a mortgage. And even though, let's say you go to three lenders, let's say they all charge a $400 fee and you're looking at $1,200 in fees right here. Well, in reality, by shopping around and finding the best possible offer, you can save thousands of dollars over the life of the loan. So even though it seems like a hassle, even though it seems enormously overpriced, it can make a lot of sense.
Chris, were you happy with the price that you ended up with and the loan that you ended up with on the house?
Yes, we were. And we went further on with the bank, and it turns out that that application fee was actually reimbursed at the very end. So we didn't end up paying that $400 because it was reimbursed to us in our HUD statement and with closing. So, and I read on their online page, their website, that is typical for that bank.
Now, that was from the lender that you actually agreed to the mortgage with, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. So in that case, they're able to use that as an inducement. And that is, if you agree to do business with us, we're going to waive that fee that essentially all the lenders are charging just for you having walked in the door. And that's great. That's the stand-up thing for them to do. But at the same time, again, they're not great humanitarians, because when you look at all those other fees and that phone book size stack of paper that you're going to have to wrestle with to get that home loan, come on, you know, they're still coming out way ahead.
Exactly.
Chris, I'm curious. You and your partner, where are you in life? Is this a first home for you?
Correct. This is the first home. I'm 30 and she's 28.
You know, I'm just wondering if you feel like you had a good experience with this bank. I'm wondering whether it's one that you'd go back to if you thought about moving up, buying another home down the road.
Probably not. You know, you learn things along the way, but... yeah, we'd probably go with a different one. I know our realtor recommended this loan officer, and being first-time homebuyers, we were thinking, okay, well, this guy's on our side. You know, he must know who is good to go to. So we took our realtor's advice.
Keep this in mind, Chris, that when you have your mortgage with a particular bank, if you bring them other business, you're going to get some big savings in terms of, say, monthly checking account fees, safe deposit box fees, and other such fees. So if you do decide that it's a bank you like and that you want to bring some of your other business under the roof, make sure you ask them about the various perks and savings you will get as somebody who has a large volume of business with them. And it's your mortgage that's typically going to be the big tipping point there, because that's what they want to keep in place and that's what they want to build off of. So you do have a little bit of leverage now if you choose to try to negotiate better terms for ancillary accounts.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Thank you so much. I've really appreciated it. And I listen to your show every week.
Well, I appreciate that. Take care.
Thanks, you too.
That was Chris, and David Lazarus has been my guest this hour on Marketplace Money. David Lazarus is a consumer columnist for the Los Angeles Times. David, thank you so much for being with me.
Always a pleasure.